You are listening to Punk News Podcast episode 527. You might say to yourself, it was a slow week this week, John. What do you guys have to talk about? But actually, you've got a lot to talk about this week. We're going to be talking about a Weird Joe Strummer comp. We're going to be talking about the Circle Jerks. We're going to be talking about D.I. recording songs they already recorded. And we're going to be talking about Neil Young putting out a long-lost speed album that no one even knew existed, but now it does exist, which would be kind of cool. And a lot of other cool stuff. So stay tuned to the Punk News Podcast episode number 527.
I was crawling through a festival way out west. I was thinking about the moon and the acid test. At first I got real dizzy with a real rocking gang. And then I saw the cold marker and the excitement gang and the rain.
And welcome back to Punk News Podcast episode 527. We are here with contributing editor Adam White. Adam White, what's going on in Canada land this week?
We have a pandemic. It continues. I don't know what else going on. I don't know. I just learned that my kids get to go back to school on Monday, so that's kind of cool because they've been here in a house with me for an entire month, and I love them, but I'd prefer not. And I'm maintaining. I'm holding on. You holding on, John?
I'm keeping on and holding on and riding the raft and more. Are you riding the raft and holding on, or are you falling to pieces?
Well, I have the glue out, so can't fall to pieces.
Are you sniffing the glue, or are you using it for self-maintenance?
Both.
Fair enough. Listen, nothing more punk than sniffing glue. And there's also nothing more punk than writing to the Punk News Podcast. You can always use it at podcast@punknews.org. And this is from someone called Sage. Podcast, I've got some fun games for you. My friends and I play these games when driving to shows. Since there are any, maybe you could play them on the podcast. And then Sage has multiple games here. We can play a couple of them. Adam, would you rather get to see the Bad Brains live, but they only do the Rise album, or get to see Bad Religion live, but they only do Into the Unknown?
Oh, you see, I'm easy on this one. I would go see Into the Unknown only because it would just be that record was such a mystery when I was a kid. Like it was, pre internet, you couldn't just go get these things. It wasn't just like on some dick's, file sharing blog or something like that. Like it was really the record that was considered so horrible and such an embarrassment that this band that we all loved that disowned it. And like, you'd never heard of that kind of thing happening. So I would, as like a big, big Bad Religion fan as a kid, I'd want to go see them play Into the Unknown. But I'm sure, and this is the twist, that like modern day kind of like hip to new wave synth punk Adam would probably be really into it. That's what I think. What about you, John?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the Bad Brains Rise is just a bad record. Like, Into the Unknown, you could make the argument, is a bad record, and it probably is somewhat bad, but at least they're trying and doing something different, whereas Rise is just kind of boring and uninteresting, and HR's not even on it. But, I mean, it's not Joseph Ives' fault for not doing a good record. I mean, the thing with the Bad Brains, people used to say that that House of Suffering, I against thought, oh, that record is the Bad Brains London Calling. Eye Against Eye is an okay album. It kind of doesn't have that much momentum. It loses firepower. Once the Bad Brains stopped doing straight up hardcore and reggae, I kind of feel like they never really regained the firepower that they had. And so Rise is just kind of midway through that period. They're just not that good. Whereas End of the Unknown is Bad Religion saying, all right, we already had a hit. Let's do something risky now. And it didn't pay off, but there's something to be said for a band that tries. And would you go see the Bad Brains play Rise or Bad Religion doing Into the Unknown, their 1983 failure?
Bad Religion, Into the Unknown. Let's see the failure in person, live.
All right, and how about this one? Would you rather have first pressings of every Clash record, including the singles, but the first track on each side of every record skips, or have streaming access to low-res MP3s of all the Clash records?
Exclusively?
I think it means you can either have the records or just listen to the MP3s. You can't have both.
Let's go with the records. because better sound quality.
How about you, Adam?
Yeah, I'm on with that. I mean, not because of sound quality, but I've resigned myself to, like, I feel like I'm unlucky. I have so many records, even fucking new records, that have that, like, one annoying skip somewhere within them where, you know, there was no visible, there's nothing visibly wrong with the record. Some of these records are even new. Like, there's no reason why they would have some weird defect like that, but they do. And I always forget that they're there, and then I'll be listening to it and enjoying myself, and all of a sudden it hits that skip point, and I'm just like, fuck! And I can just, like, I can feel the rage rising inside me, but I just, you know, then you push it back down, and you just say, okay, this is the life you've chosen. So just live with it. So yeah, I mean, I've got a few of those, and I figure if I had a whole bunch of those and they were all like cool original Clash records, I'd figure out how to live with it.
I would go for all. I mean, honestly, I'm not super precious about the quality of my records, but the older I get, the nicer I do want them to be. So I would go direct just because I hate MP3s. We've got two more games here. Do you guys want to play two more games, or we'll move on to the next letter?
Sure.
All right. Adam, would you rather F Mary Kill? Would you F Mary Kill, Adam? Would you rather Fat Mike Ness or Fletcher? I'm guessing for Pennywise.
I have a feeling that Fletcher is adorable and lovely in real life. So I'm definitely going to marry Fletcher. And then, yeah, ooh, which are the mics? Which are the mics? Which are the mics, John? Okay, like, all right, we'll kill Fat Mike for reasons I'll bring up later in the show. But yeah, I guess we'll fuck Mike Ness. I mean, I'm not a super fan of his career, but he's got, you know, he's probably got, like, you know, the word I'm looking for here. He's experienced.
How about you, Em? What's your pick?
Am I taking this too literally?
Yeah.
Like, okay.
I'm going to go with Mary Fletcher. Fuck Fat Mike, because I think there'd be a story there. And kill Mike Ness.
For me, I'm going to kill Mike Ness. Sorry, Mike, you're just kind of boring. I'm sorry. I'm going to I'm going to F Fletcher because he seems like a nice dude. And I'm going to marry Fat Mike because he's so consumed with S&M, he won't even be around most of the time. So I can just get that sweet, sweet alimony and not be bothered by him. What do you think of that?
Good plan.
You got one more here, Adam. Okay. F, marry, kill. Oh, Ian, Henry, or Jell-O?
It really comes down to who is the most insufferable of the three, right?
So, oh, that's easy. That's right? Easy.
Like, legends all, but who when you are around them would really become the most grating the quickest?
So, but you only have to be around, like for F, you only have to be around them for, like, I don't know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes?
Right.
You but, know, but, your choice, you know what I mean?
Sure, but... Which makes that the middle option, I assume, right? So, so what are we swimming to? Blah, 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 blah. I don't feel like, okay. Let's marry Ian, fuck Jell-O, kill Henry.
How about you, Em?
Mary Jell-O.
Really? Wow. Bold choice.
It'd be interesting. Like, never a dull moment. Fuck Ian, kill Henry.
I would kill Henry because he's the most insufferable. I'm sorry, Henry. But I'm not really that sorry. I'll bang Jell-O because it'll probably be, like, really funny. You know, and then I'll marry Ian because he seems to be the quietest and most reserved, and it seems like he cares about your feelings the most.
I'd like to point out for the listeners that none of us actually want to kill Henry Rollins. It's just that was the option that we were given. So,
well, you can thank Sage. That's what Sage gave. So, and we got one more letter here. This is from Frank H. Dear Punk News, I love the show. Every week it helps me while I work cleaning out the bathroom of a large university you probably know. Sometimes I find that I like listening to podcasts more than music. And then I think, am I wasting my time by not listening to music? Do you balance it out? Which do you like better? How could I make myself want to listen to music instead of podcasts? And that's from Frank H.
Well, John doesn't listen to podcasts, so he's not going to help.
But I listen to a couple, but not that many, though.
So I don't know, like, are you a big podcast listener?
Not really. I listen to like the Punk News podcast. Better than that, I don't, because like the ads really bother me. And then sometimes, like, I'll have stuff going in the background while I like do work. So sometimes if I hear people like talking, it messes me up.
All right, so I guess I'm the podcast listener here. Like I for a long time, pre-pandemic, I guess, was a serious podcast listener. Like, in that, like, I still contribute to a couple of them. Like, I give money every month to those people and stuff like that. Like, it is an art form that is near and dear to my heart. That said, it's all about context. Like, without even my meager commute. So I've been working. Because of the lockdown, I've been working from home since, nominally since March of last year, I guess. Without that little commute, that, like, the 8 minutes it takes for me to get from my home to my office, my podcast listening has gone to complete shit. And it doesn't even make sense when you add up the time involved. Because, again, that commute is 8 minutes. So, what, 16 minutes back and forth every day? But somehow not having that in my life means I'm listening to hours of less podcast a day. Like, I don't even understand how those two numbers square off, but they do. So when I'm here and I'm at home and, you know, I'm amongst my records and I'm in my little zone, I'm almost exclusively listening to music. When I'm at work, actually, I'd be streaming music at my office at work. But there's something about just like driving in a car, especially being in a car by myself, that I've fallen out of wanting to listen to music in those scenarios. And I don't know why. Like, I need talk at those points. So yeah, it's a context thing. So I would say, like, to the letter writer there, like, do what works for you, but don't try to force something when you don't. You know, if you're cleaning a bathroom and you'd rather clean a bathroom while listening to me and John, you know, then that's fine. We can take that. But don't clean a bathroom and try listening to, like, I don't know, like Dose Your Dreams or something, because it may make that record worse. And you cannot make the Punk News podcast worse. So it's okay.
Yeah, Adam said you can't make the Punk News podcast worse because it's, like, so perfect that, like, there's nothing you can do to make it worse because it's perfect. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Exactly that. John, you want to you want to know a funny story?
Yeah, sure.
So I'm unsure if the internet just moves at a speed that I can't handle anymore in my old age, or if the 20 odd years of having Punk News in my life has somehow numbed me to how stupid internet punk drama can get. So this is my experience. So a few, like, a, not, this can't be that long ago. A few weeks ago, I at random, by someone or other, get invited to a Facebook group, which is called Punk Canada. I'm going to talk about this, like, right out here, because I'm not insulting anyone. Called Punk Canada. And it is exactly what you would expect from a Facebook group about a topic, is that a bunch of people sharing stuff, right? Posting songs and, like, you know, like old YouTube rips of records and talking about the venues of old. And because it's Facebook, it's skewing older with the crowd that's in there. Like, these are you can tell that, like, these are a lot of people that were punks in the 80s, punks in the punks when things were pre-internet, pre-PC, anything, just grimy, shitty old punk guys all in there kind of, like, sharing their sharing their thoughts and their love and their various, a lot of it's nostalgic, you know, hey, remember this band? And, you know, someone posts a clip of an old song and then people jump in and they're like, oh yeah, you know, I saw them in, you know, 86 at Foof's or something. Right. And it's just a whole bunch of that. I don't know if Foof's in Montreal was open in 86, but that type of content. And the whole thing was started. This group was started, I think, as just like a pandemic boredom thing, by a guy named Paul Gott. And Paul is the lead singer of a long-running Montreal punk band called the Ripcords. So Paul goes and he starts this group, and it seemed to have grown somehow like faster than most things that I've seen punk related on the internet grow. Like in the 2 months this thing's been around, there's a good like 8,000 people that are in it. It is incredibly active. It is somehow like Facebook has decided that it is my feed. Like I go into Facebook and I don't see my family anymore. I just see like old punk dudes posting about, you know, subhumans or something. So, which, and really in my life, it kind of made Facebook better because I don't have to see people complaining about, you know, US politics or the coronavirus or anything like that. I just go in there and just see like old punks reminiscing about shit, which is great. But it really brings me back to like early punk news days, just as far as the discourse that's in there. Because in early punk news days, you know, we would go and we'd post an article about like Green Day or something. And then you'd have these guys that would just like show up in the comment sections then and just be just yelling and screaming about how what we were posting about like wasn't real punk or whatever, right? Like all those really cliched, you know, like poser arguments and all this. Well, all this is happening in this Punk Canada group. And in a way that is sort of adorable a lot of the time. And but then what I see in here is just this hyper accelerated amount of like of punk filtered internet drama in a way that I can't keep up with, and was just amazing to see how quickly it fell apart. Because, you know, it was all these people posting songs, and then it became all these people posting like then and now selfies of themselves, like, you know, like, oh, like here's someone in there, you know, boots and braces and mohawk in like 84, and then here's them, you know, here's them today, and look how punk they still look, but they're now old. And you have all these people hosting these kind of things. But and then all those things start disappearing because the folks that are moderating the group are like stop posting selfies, right? And it becomes this big like we're supposed to be about punk. And then you've got people that are in there posting things that are maybe tangentially not punk, and then the moderators of it are getting mad and getting rid of the tangentially not punk. But then today, like in the span that it took me to, I don't know, like cook my kids dinner, I go in there and poor suffering Paul, who's trying to put this group together, is post something where it's basically like, this is my final post ever in this fucking group that I've, you know, inflicted upon my life. And I can't figure out what's going on. And everyone is yelling about censorship and Nazis and all this kind of stuff. And I'm just like, what has happened? And I don't know. Like, I can't even ascertain what happened, because it's just this accelerated, like, Facebook old dude version of all the punk drama that I became like numb to on the internet so long ago. And I'm just astonished looking at everyone sniping at each other and trying to rip on each other. And it makes me so happy. Because I'm like, I remember all this. It's like, this stuff all used to really bother me. And I used to stay up arguing with people and trying to write the world, or trying to create these punk communities that are operating, you know, in a way that's just for everyone. And I just, you know, at some point, you know, became completely blind to it. But here it is, and it's happening amongst all these like old dudes on Facebook, and it's great. It's just great. And I don't even know what happened. The best I can ascertain is that today is the day in history when the Canadian government decided that the Proud Boys organization is a terrorist organization. So I can only imagine that being in the news somehow led to someone posting a bunch of stuff that is technically off topic for the bounds of the Punk Canada group, and then that started a one of these big out of like blown out of proportion wars about content policy that suddenly became a war about censorship, that suddenly became everyone yelling at each other about Nazis. And it's just great. I'm not looking for reaction or advice. It's just that it's beautiful to know that when you can go and you can still create like a nascent group of punks somewhere on the internet, and it'll fill right up with happy enthusiasts that just want to talk about Dayglo abortions. And then, you know, 2 months later, everyone's rage quitting and calling each other Nazis. It's just perfect. Like no other genre is like this.
Well, there you have it. Adam laughing at the destruction of Canadian punk.
Yes.
Very unlike Adam, who's usually trying to champion Canadian punk. We're going to do a little bit of a record collecting talk this week. And as we were doing this just broke. Once in a while on the Punish Podcast, we do record collecting where we generally each talk about three cool records that we got or interesting records, something like that. This news just broke. A 12-inch single-sided DJ single just sold on Discogs from 2008. Guess how much money it sold for?
$54,000, John.
Close, $41,000.
Ooh.
And the weird thing is only 55 people won it. Like, it just goes to show, man, if you have something crazy rare, go for the moon, man. Go for the moon. I mean, you imagine spending $41,000 on a DJ single from 2008. Just seems insane to me.
Yeesh.
Did you
buy that, John?
Yeah. I'm definitely going to buy a $41,000 DJ breakbeat electro breakcore single. Adam, listen, if I'm spending $41,000 for a record, it's going to be a high note record from Jello's personal collection. Except for it's not, because I bought that record for like $20 at Punk Rock Bowling. Listen, I'll kick it off, and then I'll let Adam and M talk. Here are three cool records that I've got recently. You guys want me to talk about my most controversial one first or my least controversial one first?
Most controversial.
So anyways, Sit and Spin Records, cool record shop in Philadelphia. I hit it up about once a month. I'm a big fan, big, big fan. They had like 15 12-inch Smith singles. And the Smith singles are very cool, because they have different versions of the title track on the A side and exclusive tracks on the B side that usually aren't anywhere else. And it's, you know, more seen in everyone's doghouse, and the price has affected the 12-inch market, the Smith 12-inch market, for that reason. I'm not ashamed to say I ran down and I snatched every single one of them up for way below market value, at least a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago. Well, a couple of years ago, just because it's like, I love the Smiths. I'm a big Morrissey fan. I definitely don't agree with a lot of the stuff he says, but the music is impeccable. And man, like these, like I had like two or three of them, but now I've got like almost all of them now. And man, like these Smiths 12-inch singles, they're 45 12-inch singles. The songs are different version than the album's version. And they just, the sound with like a 45 12-inch single, it just jumps out of the speaker and it sounds fantastic. You know what I mean? I remember one other time I bought a record that in of itself wasn't sketchy, but the band associated with the record was in hot water at the time. And so they were selling it, not a Sit and Spin, at Wild Mutation Records, which is sadly closed up. They were selling that record, and it was, the price was much lower because at the time the band was in hot water. I'm like, oh, I love this band. I want to buy this. And I'll just say it was an Amoebic 7-inch, and it was right after Rob Miller had problems. But the Amoebic 7-inch was from decades before that. And I'm like, oh, God, I wanted this record for years. And here it is, like one-third the price, just because everyone hates Amoebics now. But I still love the band. And so I bought it, and the girl at the counter was like, you're buying the Amoebics record? And I was like, yeah. So I don't know. Adam and M, should I be ashamed of buying these Smith records? Or am I an entrepreneur-style capitalist that struck while the iron was hot? They sound so good, Adam. So good.
Entrepreneur, John, I've had similar thoughts when artists in the past, I will not lie, when there are artists that I like that have gotten into trouble, I've thought about, like, I wonder what this is going to do to the price of the vinyl. Like, yeah. Like, can I sneak in and pick up people that are like selling off their collection in disgust. When then when this blows over in 2 years, I'll have got the things I want. I never executed on it. I didn't check. I didn't know if the actual market works that way, but I thought about it. So
it does. It does to a degree. Now my Smith's collection is like nearly complete. I think I'm missing a few of them still, but man, they're so good. They're so good. Here's the second record I got. Also controversial. Danbert No Bacon of Chumbawamba. He's put out solo stuff the entire time he's been in Chumbawamba as well. But early on in Chumbawamba, we're talking about like 1988, he put out a 7-inch called Bigger Than Jesus. And of course, Adam and M, what does the phrase Bigger Than Jesus reference?
Beatles.
The Beatles.
Right. And so Danbert's record comes in a brown paper bag. And you pull out of the brown paper bag, and what is it? It is literally a picture of Danbert's wiener. And I was shocked, honestly. I was not expecting a picture of Danbert's wiener. And then I get the joke Bigger Than Jesus. And so that's the record. It's Danbert doing Chumbawamba style stuff. Not that Chumbawamba is any one person, but certainly some of the magic of Chumbawamba definitely emanates from Danbert. And now I have an album that has his wang right there on the cover. I guess that's a bonus, right? Lastly, least controversially, Men at Work. We've been talking about them a lot, and we're going to keep talking about them. Here's why. Adam and M, are you guys familiar with the Half Speed Masters or the like the audiophile versions of records that they put out sometimes? What is it? It's Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab. You guys know about that?
I don't. What's that, John?
No.
You don't? All right. So do you got like maybe? I'm not trying to be a dick, but I think you guys aren't quite at the record shop as often as I am. And when you're at the record shop, it's always dads. They always want Mobile Fidelity sound pressings. And it's almost like they don't even care about the music. They just want the highest sound quality no matter what it is. Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab, they put out very limited press releases of like Steely Dan, of like dad rock, honestly. But not like Led Zeppelin. Actually, they're probably Led Zeppelin ones. Like Steely Dan, maybe Fleetwood Mac, maybe Stevie Nicks, maybe Sparks. Basically, the idea is it's premium vinyl, but the sound quality is pressed at half speed, and it's supposed to be like the best sound record you ever had. So if you have like one of these $15,000 stereos, it's supposed to sound absolutely amazing.
Is it like a different RPM? Is it like running at 45 or something? Like what is the?
It plays at 33, but it's half speed mastered, which means when they set it to, I don't exactly understand 100%, but when they set it to acetate, they played at half speed, so you get every single little nuance. Mm-hmm. And then when they actually flip it from the acetate to the record, then they speed it back up. I think that's what they do. So the idea is you get more depth, you get more clarity, but not at the sacrifice of depth. Which is the criticism most audiophiles usually have of records, and that there's like the latest David Bowie reissues. The clarity is phenomenal, but there's no range, there's no depth. It all sounds the same volume. And so the idea with the mobile sound, the Mobile Fidelity sound, is if you're a miserable dad and you hate your family and you really don't have much to look forward to in life, and the best thing you can do in life is basically talk with three other kind of greasy looking guys about how good your copy of Aja sounds compared to the other 13 copies that you have. And the Mobile Fidelity sound, you can hear the one guy, you can hear him touch the actual guitar string with his fingers, where you couldn't actually hear him touch the fingers before. That's if you're in the Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab. And so anyways, somebody had the Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab of Men at Work for way cheaper than, like, these records used to go for like 80, 100 bucks or more. Like the Pink Floyd ones are like 500. But I got a Men at Work one for 10 bucks. And I think they just mispriced it. And I took it home. I got to say, it sounds amazing. It really does sound amazing. And my record and my stereo, like, isn't even that fancy. I got like a mid-range maybe. But man, like, it sounds amazing. Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab, Men at Work. I don't know if I would spend like a ton of money for your favorite record, Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab. But if you can find like some of your favorite records by Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab, they sound good.
Cool. That's nice that it just plays on the equipment, though. So it's just basically, it is a higher resolution, I suppose you could, if you want to.
Like, there was like SACDs for a while and Half Speed Master. You know, it's all kind of the same. Your DVD audio, Blu-ray audio. It's all the same gimmick. It's one of those, you know, but it sounds great.
Cool. So I mean, you alluded to this. I spend less time in the record store than you, and in particular right now, because we're not allowed to go there. Yeah, we're in like curbside pickup, essential leaving the house only realm at the moment. So this is a related question, and my question for you is, am I wasting my time doing this?
No.
My time and my money doing this? Out of boredom, let's say, or out of just like a need to throw money in a hole, I decided I was gonna re-sleeve the vinyl. So I went on to everyone's favorite horrible company that sells things on the internet, and I went and I bought two sets of things. I bought a pack of inner sleeves.
You know, Adam, there's a website that sells those directly and it's cheaper than Amazon, just so you know.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll find out about that. Canada is going to factor into this, of course. But the So I go and I get like those like anti-static, you know, inner sleeves. These are like these plastic inner sleeves, and they're actually kind of neat. At least I think these ones are kind of neat because they're like they're rounded on the one side. So like the, you know, the record goes in the square end of it, of course, but then it rounds on the bottom, which is, I don't know if it actually has any practical use, but it is interesting to me. So I have this whole set of inner sleeves, and then I went and I bought a whole pack of outer sleeves. You know, like normal sort of whatever the fuck they're made out of, plastic PVC outer sleeve. And first of all, I'm an idiot because I did not go and actually count what I had. I just assumed that I could buy a pack of these and for some reason that they would last me longer. And of course they got me like one square through the IKEA Calyx shelf and that was it. So that was, I'm going to need a lot more. But that aside, so I went through, dutifully pulled out all the inners, replaced them with these other inners, got the nice, clean, crisp outer sleeve on them. And I can go to that shelf, the start of the alphabet, basically. And I can run my hand over all the records in the shelf. And there is something that is very aesthetically pleasing, or just like tactically pleasing about all of these in their clean new plastics. And then on my floor, I have a gigantic pile of inner sleeves that I've ripped out of all these other ones. Most of them, I'm sure, are fine, but whatever. And then all of these admittingly totally disgusting outer sleeves, which I did not realize are as gross as they are, but they are pretty gross. Is this a worthwhile pursuit that I found for myself? Because, like, from an OCD standpoint, it feels very nice. All the record, they slide in and out of the shelf very nice because they're all in like completely clean plastic right now. But am I just throwing time and money out the window by taking all these things apart and resleeving them all and all that shit?
Well, I thought you were changing the inner white sleeve. You're just changing the outer plastic sleeve.
No, both.
Listen. You do you, Adam. You do you. What I would say is, for me, I mean, I don't think, actually, I'm probably not OCD at all. I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what the definition of OCD is, but I'm probably not.
I mean, there are people definitely that are medically OCD and they get offended when people claim they're stupid.
We're talking about in a whimsical way. I get that. I'm not OCD, I don't think. But I actually would not change the white inner sleeve because that would annoy me in that the original one's not there anymore. That would bother me. However, I definitely would change the clear plastic outer sleeve because I really regret not sleeving up all my stuff. Because even if you don't touch records that often, they actually do get damn sliding next to each other. So I desperately need to put plastic sleeves, at least on my expensive records, that I really need to do. So I commend you on that. I wouldn't change the white inner sleeve just because that would bother me that it's not the original one anymore. Even though a lot of mine it probably isn't because they're used and people swap them all the time. But even so.
Yeah, like the inners, what I'm finding is like if there is an inner that is of any particular interest, which is to say anything more interesting than a generic piece of white paper, I'm usually throwing it back in there because.
But what if you had like a crash record where all this has on it is made in Great Britain and hand stamped on. See, would you leave that?
Anything that has like a stamp or writing or anything like that. I'm still leaving the record, but I'm retaining the other sleeve in the thing, right? But what I found is that a lot of the older records that I've gone and pulled stuff out of, and by older, in particular, like a lot of my older records aren't necessarily stuff that I have, I've shopped for recently, but a lot of it is like flea market stuff that I bought when I was in my teens. And this was
the golden age of flea market records.
But not the golden age of the vendor giving too much a shit about how their stuff is stocked and, moisture controlled and whatever. Right. And some of those sleeves that are coming out of there are mustard yellow. Like they are, they're pretty gnarly, and it's whenever I yank one of those out, I'm just like, ugh. I'm like, this is who knows what war this thing survived, but it does not look like a healthy place for this vinyl to live anymore. So I don't know. I am nowhere near halfway done this, and I'm gonna have to go back and give the Bezos more money, I guess.
No, you don't. There's a website dedicated to this kind of thing, and it's cheaper than Bezos.
Yeah. Okay. Well, tell the listener. Do a pitch. What is it here?
Let me look it up because I haven't ordered it.
I'm going to look it up, and I'm going to tell you how much it costs for them to ship their garbage to Canada just to break my heart on the air.
And you talk about your records of Adam Iron. You
well, my goal this year is to get a record player. And what I've been doing is I've been going through my CDs because I have quite a few CDs. So I was going through them the other day and I found some stuff that I like completely forgot I had. Like there's one and it's it's a paper sleeve and it's wrapped in plastic and it's some Sid Vicious bootleg and it has like a hand number on it. And I don't really remember like where I got it or what the whole story is, but it had fallen like behind the shelf. So everything's still good with it, but now I don't really know what the deal with it is. So I want to look that up and find more out about it. And the other thing was I found out that I have a lot of CDs by just horrible, horrible, awful people. So I don't know what I want to do with them.
Like who? Like you mean like the records are bad or the people are like Gary Glitter records CDs or like Ace of Base CDs?
Like Marilyn Manson CDs. So, I don't know. Cause I want to try to get as much, like, I thought like, oh, I'll try to get money like from it. And it's like, would anyone really want them and everything? And, I thought about trying to melt them and like make something useful out of them, but I don't think that's going to work. So I'm not sure what I'm going to do with them.
That's a good question. Ed brings up a really good question because like if you have like, this always annoys me. Like if somebody in the band has something bad and like the person's like, I've got this expensive Steve Smith record, you know, the people that come to like, well, you know, sell it to, you know, donate it to Goodwill or whatever. Cause maybe somebody will want it, but then, you know, Steve Smith's not making money off it. It's like, well, Steve Smith's not making money off it anyway. It's already sold, you know? So anyway, I mean, Marilyn Manson CDs aren't worth anything. And so the question is, should you donate them? But then someone else will have access to Marilyn Manson, this horrible human being, you know? So maybe you're better off. I mean, like, can you, until last week, did you enjoy Marilyn Manson's music?
Some of the stuff started coming out like a few months ago. And at that point it was like, oh, I can't do this anymore.
Okay. So would you be able to enjoy Marilyn Manson's music going forward at all?
I'm going to say no.
Right. Okay. So then, those CDs aren't worth like anything. So okay. I would say either they're worth like a dollar. Like, unless you got, like you have like crazy rare ones or just like the album.
I don't think I have any like really rare ones. I think they're all,
Like a Marilyn Manson is worth like a buck. You know what I mean? So I would save jewel case, just trash the rest, you know, but if you want to actually, I might advise against melting them and making something out of it because CDs are actually flammable and I hate for you to burn down your house trying to teach Marilyn Manson a lesson.
You know? Well, that's good to know.
You know, so Adam, what's your take?
Yeah, what do you do with, right? Because then you just have the added...
Well, it was in the Mebix record. You run to the, down to the record shop, buy it right away.
Well, but especially if it's something that, I mean, you take say the controversy of a person being doing something horribly. Take the controversy out of it. So let's say it's not so much that someone did something horrible. It's just something that you at one point in your life were listening to, but do not care about anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. And the problem is a little bit worse if it's something that you do not care about anymore. And it's just sort of genuinely fucked up with age in a way that is non-resellable. Like I had that, what was it? It was like, I had a bunch of like Real Big Fish CDs or something that I came across the other day where like in my 90s ska heyday, I was into all that kind of stuff, but like, man, that band is dumb. And I realized a long time ago that there are other things that I wanted to devote my energies to. And it was, and you know, I had already written off CDs at that point, you know, let alone Real Big Fish in particular. Right. And they were just there, but they were CDs I listened to when I was a teenager. Like they were all scratched up and bashed and like they had knocked around under the seat of a 86 Chevy Blazer for 4 years. Right. Like they're not useful to anyone. So what are they? Like they don't hold any particular nostalgic value to me. You know, that I don't adore them. They don't remind me of my first date or something. Like they're just, right? They're just stuff. But throwing them in the trash feels wasteful or strange or something like that. But I can't sell them on Discogs because holy shit, I'd get like shit on by some guy from Norway because something that I said is all fucked up, right? Like I don't want that.
So, that's the worst. You're like, this record has some issues. It plays, but it's got some issues. The person gets it. It's like, there's a scratch on it. Like, yeah, I said it. It's like, oh, man, fire's the worst. You could be like,
literally on fire. And then they would respond like, thumbs down, literally on fire. And it's like, that's what you said. But so I don't know. Like, I don't know what the dead weight of the world like becomes in that case. And you may be onto it, Em, where it, the only thing you can do is make weird outsider art with it.
Actually, no, Em, there's bad. Em, what you should do is not with fire, but with scissors and knives, be safe. Make some kind of like big artistic statement out of your old Marilyn Manson CDs. There's art.
Oh, that'd be cool.
You know what I mean? Like how it affects the artist. Bam, bam. Stop this podcast. Stop him from. We'll actually await your artistic masterpiece. You have 4 weeks.
Oh no, the time starts now.
All right.
Yeah.
Well then, you can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. Oh, there's one other thing we got to talk about. We're getting to the show proper. A lot of BS in this week, but that's all right. It's already 10:30. We haven't even started yet, honestly. Well, we'll do what we can. Adam White.
Yes.
We've got a astounding new interviewer at Punk News that's doing excellent interviews. And I believe it's that person's first interview ever. And more interviewed Londe Heck of Muncie Girls and did a high-quality interview that literally would be able to run in almost any paid magazine, magazine that pays for interviews there is. And more, excellent job. Briefly, tell us about your interview with Londe Heck. Was that your first interview? Were you nervous? And how do you feel you did? Because you can read at punknews.org right now. It is excellent. It talks about the new record. It talks about what's going on in Londe's life. And it's just an all-around excellent interview that is not a sales pitch.
Well, thank you so much. This is the first interview I've done where somebody has wanted to talk to me. I was in school for a little bit, and I was a part of the newspaper. And the first story I got was, hey, there's this, what even were they? They were some sort of something. And it was like, go find out how they're funded. So it was like an investigative piece. So like I was trying to set things up with people and sometimes they didn't want to talk to me and they were being really cagey. So, like, it was really exciting to be able to, talk to Landy, because, like, just amazing, like, great answers. And it was really fun to do that again, like, in a heartbeat. It was fun because, I did, like, a bunch of research, and I have, I think, I did at least 3 drafts of questions. So I'm really glad that it turned out well. It's funny because the most, so I tried to be calm and stuff. And when I dialed the number, I was like, oh no, did I do something wrong? And I was just so nervous until it clicked over and started talking. So yeah, it was really good. So please check it out. I think it sounds good.
And what kind of school paper did M write for? Were they having like breaking open like the secret funding to the Alaskan pipeline or something? Like I went to Penn State, which is a big school, and the new terms of the collegiate. It's like there's a new pizza shop opening up. You can go there because there's 19 other pizza shops on Beaver Avenue.
I went to like one of like the most like aggressively lefty schools in Canada, and our school paper was all about the revolution, man. It was like student union action against the conservative government in Ontario at the time. It was pretty awesome.
All right. Well, listen, you can always use a podcast at punknews.org. Let's play a song and come back and hit the news. Who's got a song to play?
You go ahead.
Okay. Well, just talked about Landy Hecht. So let's play something from her album. So the album's called Going to Hell. So let's do the title track. So this is Landy Hecht, Going to Hell.
Good way, not in a good way, and I'm ready to shed.
And that was Landi Hecht doing Going to Hell from her first solo album. And you can read her interview with M at punknews.org. Let's talk about what's happening in the world right now. The Circle Jerks. They were going to go on a tour this year, which was pushed back from last year, except for something has changed. Here's what's changed. They're not going to go on tour till 2022. I think this wasn't – well, I don't know if this was surprising to people, but this was like a, kind of another slap in the face to people. I know a lot of people, myself included, were like, well, maybe things will be back by June. Maybe things will be back by June. But it looks like things will not be back by June. And it looks like live shows, if we're super lucky, won't even start till like late fall 2021. We were probably going to have an entire year without shows. That's what we're looking at. It bummed me. I mean, if that's what we got to do, that's what we got to do. I get it. It did bum me out. I will say, like, a couple of weeks ago was it really when it started hitting me. It's like, damn, man. It's like another year without no shows. Like, oh, man. Like, I didn't really mind it too much, like, for the last 6 months or whatever. But then I'm like, man, like, I really kind of want to get out there and check some stuff out. And that was kind of a bummer. So, I don't know. Adam, were you surprised by this announcement? And does this portend anything bigger?
No, I think that the writing has kind of been on the wall that things were not going to get back to normal as quickly as everyone liked. Like, you know, the year wasn't going to turn and then we were all going to be able to like dust our hands of all of this and move on. I think that the issue now, to be an optimist, is not so much that we're going to get out of this. Or it's not so much that we're going to get out of this before the end of 2021. It's just that the uncertainty around when the majority of the public gets vaccinated and all that becomes too much of like a financial liability for actually planning anything. So I'm actually confident that by the fall you will have shows, but I don't think they're going to be shows that anyone is going to be able to book for months in advance with confidence that it's going to actually happen. So if it's the local venue rolling the dice and saying, you know what, we're going to bring, you know, the big local band back in October to play a show, like, chances are that could happen, but I don't think you're going to see people put their money on the line and go and actually like arrange the logistics and the travel and all that stuff of doing an extended tour, which in this Circle Jerks case, right? Like they were going to be on the road for a month, right? So there's a lot of organization, you know, like a lot of travel, hotels, all that kind of stuff that they'd have to organize for that. So I could totally see why they'd want to go like, you know, punt on that till where they're not going to have to redo all the planning for a third time. So I think that it's going to nuke tours. It's not going to necessarily nuke shows come the fall. It's totally going to rip a lot of people's misguided expectations about summer festivals down. And I think that we're going to see this. You're going to see this push and pull in the later summer, in particular, when the vaccination of the most vulnerable will be mostly complete, but not complete to a degree where the authorities in whatever region that you happen to be in are going to just say like, all right, everyone, just like everyone get in the field and fuck, right? Like that's not going to happen. They're still going to have to, you know, it's still going to take a while for the risk to be kind of completely gone from those kinds of events. So you're going to have, I am positive, John, that some, just like last year, that what was that Yahoo Biker Fest that Smash Mouth gave everyone COVID at? What was it called?
I'm not trying to be. I'm surprised you never heard of Sturgis. Like Sturgis is like a worldwide thing.
Hey, it might be. It's you know, it's not my culture. I don't know. So, but that kind of event where it is something where people are really going to want to be champion and kind of get back out to. And the people that run it or the people that would go to it have sort of an anti-authoritarian streak to them anyways. You're going to see a few of those festivals, like at some point say like, you know, like, fuck you, state of New Hampshire. We don't care about your rules. We're going to Sturgis, or I don't even know if Sturgis is in New Hampshire, wherever it is. Right. But you, like
is it New Hampshire?
I don't know. I picked an American name out of a hat, honestly. Where is it in? Is it in Georgia?
South Dakota, Adam. South Dakota.
I wanted to say like Texas, like I was on that what is it, Space Junk, the Devo song. Anyways, you're gonna have, I think, people that start to get very itchy about their festivals being canceled, but I can't imagine the actual organizers of those festivals, unless they're have an axe to grind and trying to prove something, they're not going to want to put their financial ass on the line for that things are going to be great by then. But hey, especially not in Canada, because we're not really doing too good with this. But like you guys are ahead of us, so you might get I could see it being possible that there could be a fest this year. I'll go there.
Will there be a punk rock bowling in the fall, Adam?
It's possible. I think it's possible.
And what's your prediction? Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Adam. I'm sorry.
No, I was saying, I think that there is going to be there is going to be a political incentive, there's going to be a political incentive for the people that are in charge of this to, if they can, like, knock it out of the park. And I have to imagine that that's kind of what Biden's people are going to want to do. Like, they're going to look at this and go, like, you know, do we take it easy with trying to get out of this hole? Like, no, like, let's aggressively get out of the hole. Like, let's show that we are so much more competent than the guys that were here, you know, and let's just, like, destroy this thing and get going. And
so John can go to punk rock.
So John can go to punk rock bowling. But like, and that might be able to happen because you guys have, you have the money and the capacity. By you, I mean America. Like, you have the money and the capacity and stuff like that to, I think, make that happen. Where it's really just a matter of political will. You know, up in Moose Country where we live, we're hamstrung by other things. Like, we don't have the domestic vaccine manufacturing capacity, so we're sort of reliant on Europe or America giving us the vaccines that we've ordered, like, despite the fact that we ordered them. It doesn't really matter, like, if they don't show
up. And now
up.
The tables have turned,
right?
After years of Adam's abuse. Now who's got the power, Adam? Now yeah. Who's got the power?
So we're sort of stuck waiting for that. And imagine, like, a lot of the various smaller countries of the world are going to be in that type of scenario where, you know, if you're in Spain, like, do you have the capability to manufacture that stuff there, or do you have to wait for, like, the wider EU mechanism to, like, get you the vaccines that you need? If that's the case, then you might be waiting longer. So I don't know. Sorry, that was long.
And more. Will I get to see Madness this fall?
There's so many moving parts. You know, like, it would be if every place does it right, I think that's there would be a better chance than there is now. Like, the one thing is, how are you going to get, like, international bands, you know, with the variants that are popping up? Like, I don't know, like, the effectiveness if everyone's vaccinated. I don't know how effective that would be against, like, the strain that popped up in, like, the UK and all that kind of stuff. So would it just be, like, a local, or would they go to more of, like, a local approach? Like, okay, if you're a band from, like, these areas, you can play this festival. I think a lot, like, hinges on how things roll out and how it's handled. Hopefully it's handled really well, and hopefully, like shows and festivals and stuff will come back before 2022. But I think 2022 is, like, I think that's a safer bet, because it's, like, by that time, you know, there'll be more of an idea of how to handle it, and more places will have kind of got their footing with it. And, like, it does show that, like, at least just from my perspective, like, the band cares, you know, about the fans and stuff. It's not just like, oh yeah, we're going to put it on this time, you know, whatever. It's like, we're giving you lots of notice. It's going to be here. It's going to be a time when we can hopefully have shows in the best possible setting. You know, so I think that's a a good thing too. And hopefully, again, everything works out and things are back to normalish soon.
The answer, M, is John doesn't get to see Madness in the fall. Anyway, moving on. Let's see here. Let's talk about some weird archival. Actually, we got like three weird archival releases in a row, so let's hit them all. Here's the first one that Adam just pointed out. This is not even on Punk News yet, but it will be. The Joe Strummer Estate is issuing another Joe Strummer archival collection. This is called Assembly, and it's basically sort of supposed to be Joe Strummer's greatest hits. The weird thing is, it's basically the quote greatest hits from the three Mescaleros records. And actually, also some of the Earthquake Weather stuff as well. Looks like Love Kills is on there. Doesn't look like anything else from Earthquake Weather is on there. Well, Love Kills not on Earthquake Weather, but it's the same era. It's got three unreleased tracks. It's got I Fought the Law live in November 2001, Rudy Can't Fail live in November 2001, and Junko Partner acoustic version. And my question is, and I'll look this up while we're discussing this, I think those two live recordings are from the Joe Strummer live album. And I think the Junko Partner acoustic is just from the Hellcat 4, given the boot 4, but I could be wrong.
It says unreleased for the Junko Partner one, right?
But the way we'll confirm this or not confirm it, though, is I'll see if this is from the two live releases are from the Joe Strummer live album. And if they are, then we know they're suspect with regards to their facts. The other weird thing is it's remastered by Paul Hicks, who remastered a bunch of Beatles and George Harrison and Rolling Stone stuff. I don't know what Rolling Stone stuff he remastered. Probably some of the early stuff. And the other weird thing, it's coming out on Dark Horse Records, which, of course, is George Harrison's record label, which is weird. Maybe Paul Hicks owns Dark Horse Records now? I don't know. I guess the other thing is this follows the relatively recently Strummer 101, which was kind of touted as a rarities and greatest hits comp. And honestly, I got it, and I'm a big Joe Strummer fan. I'm a big Clash fan. I thought the Strummer 101 release – well, it focused more on the quieter side of Joe Strummer, which I thought was a little boring. Looks like this one has a little bit more of the rock to it, and so it's more of, I guess, a true greatest hits. Adam White, I believe you're as big a Clash fan as I am, or even bigger. Are you pumped about this? Do you think this is weird? What's happening? While I look up the live dates.
Yeah, no, I had done – confirm it for me. I had done a little bit of looking into those live dates, and the recordings that were the the Acton Fire Hall benefit or something like
that's
that.
That's what I'm thinking of, yeah.
That was 2002. Damn. I'm pretty sure. So these are earlier live recordings than that. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to...
15 November 2002, and when are these from?
24 November 2001.
So a year before.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there you go. It is exclusive.
So I'm unsure of... what's motivating this, I guess, and that,
really,
well,
really,
well, okay, money's motivating, of course, but I didn't get 101 because it didn't seem like I couldn't figure out how it was necessary for me. Like I all of that material I already knew and have heard, of course. So it didn't strike me why I needed it all in that particular. That particular order on that particular, you know, two sides of wax. This something aesthetically about this seems more real. I don't know how to phrase that. Like this seems like a more put together product, at least in the way it's being presented right now. So for whatever reason, I'm a little bit more interested in this in a way that I can't quite describe. I mean, would I go drop money on a double LP just to get a unreleased acoustic version of Junko Partner? I don't know. I guess we're gonna find out. These are primarily tracks from the Mescaleros era. Is there anything from Walker or Earthquake Weather on here? Like, if we are we sure about that?
Well, there's Love Kills. That's not on Earthquake Weather, but I believe it's Rockabilly War. Well, which is not a is Earthquake Weather Rockabilly War? The backing band. Mm. I think the question is Xander Schloss, and if it is that, it is. I'll look right now. It is not. Oh, yeah, it's Xander, so it's the same band. So yeah, but it's not on the record. So
yeah, so like I mean I get why some of that other Sleepwalk is on here, and Sleepwalk is on Earthquake Weather. So is Gangsterville on here even? Like, yeah, it's I'm curious about this for some reason. I have not gone and rebought most of the Mescalero's records on vinyl. I have all that stuff on CD. So I mean, there's definitely like a hole in my preferred listening environment right now for a lot of this Strummer stuff. And I'd be happy to fill it. I guess the question is that, do I bother with this right now? Or do I just go rebuy the three Mescalero's records, because that's really where all this material comes from. And I liked all those Mescalero's records. So, you know, it's not like I'm like, oh, finally, I can get a copy of this that doesn't have like Cooling Out on it. Like, nah, I'm fine with even the weird songs on those. What about you, John? Is this something you're going to get? Because you bought 101.
Yeah, I'm going to get, because I'm a sucker. But I'm just going to get the CD just because I want every single thing he ever released. So I'll get the CD for I Fought the Law and Rudy Can't Fail. And Joe Strummer did this, I don't know, weird thing is the right word to phrase it, but and probably the biggest show I regret not going to, maybe tied with not seeing the original Stooges, was Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros. And because I didn't go because I was only like 18. And I thought that they didn't do any Clash stuff, but they actually did a ton of Clash stuff. And I'm really bummed that I didn't go. But the interesting or weird thing that I did is the Clash stuff that they would do would be the Clash covers. They would do like Police on My Back. They would do I Fought the Law. They would do Armageddon Time. But they wouldn't do Clash originals. And I always wondered why. And they're kind of repeating that here. Because I Fought the Law is a cover. And Rudy Can't Fail is sort of a cover. Do you know why he did that? Like, I guess, was he making the argument that he didn't want to do Clash stuff because he felt that was harming the legacy? But, oh, I can do these covers because I'm not really covering the Clash. I'm covering Eddie Grant.
You know what? I had never thought about that. Like, I had never particularly parsed out that Mescaleros were primarily playing the cover stuff. Oh, if only because the Clash owned so, like, that, like, they remade so many of those songs in a way that just felt like organic to the Clash, like, right, like the, you know, I even though I love the original and all that, like in my heart of hearts, like Pressure Drop is a Clash song because that's where I first encountered it, right? That's where,
yeah,
right, I Fought the Law, you know, songs like that were just like those will, I'll go to my grave, you know, understanding those are covers, but we'll still, like, you know, like loving them as Clash songs. So I never thought about the fact that Mescalero's live sets were heavy in that. I kind of want to go find some set lists now and see how much that's the truth, because that is a fascinating.
So theory. Here is the standard set list from the final tour. Bindi Bai. Well, I'll skip the non-Clash tracks, but Jungle Partner cover, London Burning not a cover, Rudy Can't Fail sort of a cover, Police and Thieves cover. Justice Tonight, cover. White Man and Hammersmith Palais, not a cover. The Harder They Come, cover. Pressure Drop, cover. Police on My Back, cover. I Fought the Law, cover. And then Walk on the Wild Side, Blitzkrieg Bop. And then Bank Robbers, not a cover. So more covers than non-covers.
Hmm.
But a few genuine Clash stuff too, you know?
Interesting. We should get, I don't know who.
We should ask Joe Strummer.
We should get Time and Dog or something and get one of them to tell us.
Adam, let's try to get Time and Dog on the podcast. I mean, that's doable.
Call him up.
All right, it's on. Time and Dog. We will ask Time and Dog to be on the Punk News podcast.
Oh, we don't have his number.
Well, we can't
do it right now. All right. When you get your record player, are you getting a copy of Joe Strummer Assembly?
Why is it called Assembly? What does that even mean?
I don't think so, just because there's not enough like unreleased stuff to kind of warrant buying it. Like, it'd be interesting to hear and I'd want to hear it, but I don't know if I'd buy it.
Okay, well, how about this, Em? Would you buy this? D.I. Actually, we're running kind of late, so let's do Neil first. Neil Young is releasing yet another long-lost album. And what is amazing to me about Neil is a lot of bands have, like, sessions. Like there's that David Bowie album, quote, The Gouster, which became Young Americans, which isn't really an album. It's actually just, like, the demos from Young Americans that the record company decided to call The Gouster, which it isn't even really. But the weird thing about Neil Young is that, like, yeah, Neil Young has got, like, long-lost albums. Here's the entire album that he recorded, just never put out, which I find that hard to believe that they just wouldn't put out an entire album. But the evidence kind of suggests, at least with the previous Neil Young ones, that is the case. I think there's at least three long-lost Neil Young, and admittedly, a lot of the songs were re-recorded in later sessions. But, like, I think the two or three long-lost albums that he's put out appear to be fully completed albums. And now he's saying he's putting out another one. The next one is going to be called Johnny's Island. And this is, if you ask me, among and perhaps the most interesting part of Neil Young's career. Neil Young planned to record a tropical-themed album in the early 1980s called Island in the Sun. And he actually did go to Hawaii and recorded a bunch of tracks. For some reason, and Adam might know, or maybe Em will know more, about halfway through, he's like, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. And then he took some of those songs, stripped away almost all the instruments, and then turned it into like this electronic Kraftwerk-esque, Chrome-esque album called Trance, which is probably my favorite Neil Young album, which that's a dick answer, but I love Trance. I really do. And the Trance album is like this robotic, energetic, like, if you ask me, it's almost better than Kraftwerk because it's more muscular and like it's about how computers are taking over the world and everything. And Neil Young sings through a vocoder and he sounds like a robot. And it's a trippy, awesome album. And that's kind of – it's weird that that's what that album ended up being, because originally it was supposed to be almost like a reggae or an island or a tropical or a West Indies themed record. And now Neil Young is claiming, oh, actually I did record the whole thing and it's going to be called – Johnny's Island, then it's going to come out. And interestingly, a lot of the songs on this album would be morphed into trans records, trans songs rather, including I know they listed some of the tracks somewhere. Like an Inca, Hold On to Your Love, and a couple of other tracks from the album Trans. And I expect that the Island in the Sun songs will sound radically different than trans songs, but I don't know. So I'm so excited about this because in the back of my mind, I'm like, wow, what if there's another record that's just like Trans, but it's different songs, which that's not what this is going to be. What it probably will going to be is going to be, and maybe you two will disagree, it's probably just going to be Neil on his acoustic guitar, you know, kind of doing some stuff. But Em, are you excited? Do you think it's just going to be demos? Is this going to be a full band thing? And will it be more trans? I don't think it will be, but it'd be awesome if it was.
That would be really cool if it was. I think it's going to be like very like soft.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think that's going to be a bad thing. I think it's going to be, you know, interesting to hear for sure. And hopefully he has some of the like the Hawaiian influences and stuff. I think that'd sound really, really cool. But yeah, I think it's going to be neat.
There's something that I find is incredibly punk rock about Neil just like recording whole records and then just due to various fights with his labels, just being well going and like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to put it in the vault for 40 years and then just, you know, just goes to something else.
Adam, do you think that is what he did or do you think like – Or we're being scanned. Like when the Rolling Stones re-released Exile on Main Street, you're like, well, we actually have a bunch of songs we didn't release, but honestly, they weren't done. So we're going to put the extra stuff in now. And so the long lost songs are kind of combos from 2015 and 1971. You know, is that what we're getting? Or does he straight up have like a whole album that he just never put out?
In most cases, I would say it's a financially motivated thing. And I'm sure finance is part of the motivation by putting these things out in the world. But like I think that Neil has proven that he has a gigantic vault full of crazy stuff, and he has like in numerous times proven that he will shoot himself in the foot to prove a point, and you know
and also right, you guys
yeah bang, like, there's a lot of I'll show you guys in Neil's history. So this just seems to line up with one of those. He's yet to find the bottom of this archives project of his. He's not gone and started putting out like bad soundboard recordings or something like that. Like, this is not Bomp Records. So I think that there's still lots of wacky shit from Neil's secret closet that we're going to get. And yeah, I mean, I'm a huge trans fan too. So this will be a treat.
Adam, do you think we're going to get a long lost album of trans, like extended trans mixes or long lost trans songs or even alternate versions? Will we get that?
Maybe, but I think it'll be a while. I think that there's going to be a lot of stuff that is going to please like the more acoustically minded boomer Neil Young fan first before he really gets into it. And he's like, you know, this, you know, brings out like, oh, here's where I hooked a vocoder up to the, you know, to the Lincoln and made this sound. I don't know if it's going to be a while before those things start showing up.
Here's a little hint for the hardcore Neil Young collector. There's a Neil Young compilation called Lucky 13, and it looks like a budget compilation just looking at the front. And you often find it in the dollar bin. Get that compilation. It's got an extended 8-minute mix of Sample and Hold and a new version of Transformer Man. And it's like these long lost mixes from trans that like no one even knows about that are fantastic. And it's like in the dollar bin.
You should get it, people. So our third reissue here, or, you know, old thing coming back that we want to talk about here is DI, right? So DI is an album that is coming out. It is called Greatest Hits A to
Z.
Z, H is Z. Greatest Hits A to Z. It's coming out on Cleopatra. And it notably has the songs sequenced in alphabetical order, which is a weird, a weird artistic choice. Yeah. but B features re-recordings of these of the band's hits of all these records. Included in this is we're gonna scare quote the word cover of The Adolescence Amoeba, which was of course co-written by DI founder Casey Royer when he was still in that band. So that is included. There are three questions for you, Mr. John Gentile. A, are you down with DI? B, are you down with an old band re-recording their stuff? And C, why is this in alphabetical order?
And D, does anyone actually buy these things? Is the big question for me. So to answer your first, A, I don't hate DI. I'm not a huge fan. They're surprisingly kind of mellow sometimes for me. And when I listen like to their Horse Bites Dog album or whatever the album's called, I wish it just had a little bit more power to it. So, I mean, I'm not anti-DI. I really love the Slayer covers of DI, but I just think they're okay. The second question, the alphabetical order, or am I going to get this? Oh, no. The second question was, am I down with the band re-recording their older material? The answer is that almost never works and is almost always worse, except for when it's not. And sometimes it's awesome. Three very notable exceptions is A, Johnny Cash re-recording his own stuff was rad as hell. But I think that's kind of different here. That's kind of an artist, you know, near the end of his career, looking back on his entire career and saying, I was a young, fiery man when I wrote, you know, Delia's Grave, and now I'm a withered old man, and you can hear the age in my voice and compare the two and see the ravages of time on a man, and despite the time, that a man's essence doesn't change over time if he has integrity. You know, that's the Johnny Cash record, rad as hell. The second one is the Desmond Decker record called Black and Decker, which is Desmond Decker with a lot of the artists that were on Stiff Records. And that album, it kicks ass. I think it's got a bad reputation, but it kicks ass. It's straight up Desmond. It's a clever record. It's Desmond Decker covering his ska hits with a bunch of two-tone heroes, and it's as rad as you think it would be. Just a great record. The third one is the Dwarves' How to Win Friends and Influence People, which I thought was actually probably the best done of this kind of record, and that's because the Dwarves re-recorded a lot of their lo-fi recordings in their modern hi-fi stance, or style, rather, and they sequenced it like a live show. So essentially, you get basically a live record, but with the fidelity of a new studio record. So the Dwarves record, Young and Good Luck, I mean, How to Win Friends and Influence People, is an excellent, awesome record that just kicks ass all the way through. That being said, sequencing something in alphabetical order, it just seems weird. Like, sequence of an album really can affect how good an album is. And so here they're just like, well, let's just put it in alphabetical order. I mean, I get opening with Amoeba because that's unexpected and it's kind of clever. But the rest, it's like, here's just random songs in random order. Like, I don't get that.
Is it possible that, like, someone screwed up and like, accidentally alphabetized the press release? Or because it's so bewildering. Like sequencing really matters.
Yeah, actually, maybe at the pressing plant. I mean, like, maybe the person that sent it to the pressing plant. No, but it's called Greatest Hits A to Z. You know what I mean? Like,
it is. So the title. Shit. Okay.
So they I would say that's a good guess, but they clearly did it on purpose. I just think it's a bad idea. I mean, there's other bad ideas in music, like when the Dead Boys re-recorded their album, or when Theory re-recorded their first album. Just a bad idea. I guess I can't fault a band for trying to make bucks. I don't know, would anybody but the most hardcore fans buy this? And how many super hardcore DI fans are there? Or is this kind of like one of these sketchy releases, a la Bop Records, where like they're trying to make it look like a band's greatest hits to confuse just the guy at the record? Like, oh, I like DI. Oh, wow, their greatest hits. I'll get this. And it's like, not. You know what I mean? Like that sketchy thing.
We're just going to shit all over Bump.
Unprovoked. Honestly, Adam. Like, if someone's already shit all over themselves, you shitting on them is not going to make that much of a difference. You know what I mean? But the other thing is like, as a fan, I mean, I'm not a huge DI fan, but I'd much rather have, like, something called, like, the blank radio sessions, where they just, you know, basically play a live show, but it's in a studio, so it sounds better. That's cool and fun, and I dig that. But, Greatest Hits masquerading re-record, I just don't get it. I think it's a misstep. But I mean, I bear the, I know it will. I hope they sell enough copies to make it worthwhile. I don't know.
I think that the alphabetization, there we go, is just a gimmick to get people to kind of, you know, like, oh, this is something.
3 seconds.
Yeah. This is something different. You don't see this every day. I listened to a little bit of it, and like it doesn't sound bad. It sounds pretty decent. It sounds pretty good. I'm not a huge DI fan. Like, I like them, but I'm not like, you know, a super fan. So I don't think that I'd buy it. But like, it doesn't sound bad. It sounds pretty decent.
Well, they have it. A recommendation from him. let's see here. Do we want to play a song and come back, or do we want to play a song and wrap this bad boy up? I could go either way. I don't care. I know, Adam, you wanted to talk about the Neos.
Yeah, but you know what? That's something that's going to be reissued in a few months. So that one can wait until next week. Plus, it's a fun story. Let's wrap her, but play something first.
Play a song. Maybe play what you want, but I say maybe play Neos. A Neo's track to hook people's interest about Canadian hardcore for next week.
No, because I got to play something that's actually related to that.
Okay.
Here, I'm gonna play something totally that's not that, but I think people should check out a label out in Vancouver called Neon Taste. It's run by Josh Nickel of Chain Whip. They've released a bunch of cool stuff in the last few years. The LP from like a dark wave band called Dead Cells. They had recent 7 inches from Bootlicker and Nutrition, both of which I thought were really cool. And they have a LP that they are announcing on Friday of the week that we're recording this, from a band called Head Cheese. And
Head Cheese.
Yes. And Head Cheese, I've heard nothing from them in the past. They had a demo that was floating around last year that a lot of people thought was really cool. But it is just snarky, pissed off hardcore that feels a lot like the old Toronto band Brutal Knights. If anyone remembers them, which was a band that was on
Brutal Knights.
Brutal Knights was on a Deranged.
Deranged Records.
You know who Deranged. But anyways, though. So Head Cheese, they have a record that is going to be announced. It should be up for order by the time anyone hears this. I'm going to play a song from that they streamed because it's just delightful. It's called Talk to the Therapist. So this is Talk to the Therapist by Head Cheese from, I don't even know where they're from, Kamloops maybe? Somewhere in BC. So anyways, here you go.
And that was Head Cheese from Fruit Loops, British Columbia.
Yeah.
And listen, thanks for tuning in. We had somewhat of a Senate show tonight, but we had a lot of stuff to cover and more. Anything you want the listeners to know about, anything they should check out, perhaps your Landy Hecht interview with Muncie Girl.
Please check out my Landy Hecht interview. It took a while to transcribe and edit, so give her some views, please.
And Adam White, are we such Joe Strummer fans that we're becoming the kind of fan that hates every single thing their favorite artist does? Is that what we're becoming?
No. I wouldn't say that. That's a bad take, John. We're delightful fans that are just cheap. That's all.